So the question was asked, may one attend a lecture given by a female who is given the title of rabbi by the Reform movement? Before addressing the question, I want to address something more basic, which we always say and always needs to be repeated. When a person approaches being Jewish or being Orthodox, so it's a growing process. And the answers that one will receive when one has grown in the process, as opposed to someone who's coming and is fresh to the process, well, the answers are going to be different. And the simple reason is that a person can't make a switch and change everything overnight. We once had a guy here who came to Machon Meir, and his Reform rabbi sent him here. So the rabbi is telling all the people they could drive on Shabbos and they don't have to keep most of the Torah. And yet this student who was excelling, he told him, come to Machon Meir. So the guy comes here and he learns and suddenly he discovers, hey, there's a whole Torah out there. There are a lot of things we're supposed to do, not supposed to do, that they never told me. So after spending a few months here, he went back to his hometown and called up his rabbi and said, Rabbi, I have to have a meeting with you. I want to understand what's going on here. So he sits down with the rabbi and he asks him, he says, I learned all these laws and you're not teaching all these laws. How do you explain that? So the rabbi gave him all kinds of reasons and all kinds of excuses. He said, well, if I say it, people won't listen. And I myself, I don't drive on Shabbat. And all kinds of things. At the end of the day, this guy is more in touch with his Reform rabbi than he is with us. Even though he spent all the time learning here, and he went back home, and he came with all these claims and questions to the rabbi. The rabbi said, I know everything about Orthodoxy. I'll help you to keep an Orthodox Jewish home. And he gave him guidelines, and he told him all the halachas. He said, get paper plates at home. He told him how to work out everything in his parents' home to keep kosher. And the guy, to this day, I think, is still in touch with this person who was the Reform rabbi of the family, and he's not in touch with us. I know he doesn't keep Shabbos or many other laws. I know because I get invitations from him every so often. Like we're on the same network on the internet, so when he attends an event, so sometimes they send me an invitation. And I see the events are on Shabbos, so the guy is going to events on Shabbos. When we're speaking to a person, so a person doesn't exist in a vacuum. A person has a place where he comes from and a place where he's going to. And we could never know where a person's headed, but we could know where a person's coming from. And it's not always so easy for a person to depart from that. Now, as such, there are certain halachot which we say, you'll get there. You have to learn all of the Torah and you have to keep all of the Torah. But a person can't do it in one day. Just like a child that becomes bar mitzvah, he doesn't know all the halachas the day he becomes bar mitzvah. And when a person becomes a ger, so the halacha says in Shulchan Aruch, en midach dekinimo, we don't look over his shoulder and say, hey, you missed that. We don't keep commenting to him because when a person's a ger, the halacha takes into account that it's a learning process. And when a person grew up in a Jewish home, so without knowing why you can't turn on a light on Shabbos, he's used to not turning on a light on Shabbos, and without knowing why he doesn't eat in a restaurant unless it has a hechsher, he knows he doesn't eat something unless it has a hechsher. But when a person comes from a background where that's not how he grew up, so then all the things that a regular Jewish child and all of your children, Bezrat Hashem, take for granted, that person has to contend with. And so before we address the question, we have to first address a more basic question, and that is, where is a person holding? Very often people will call and ask me shailas. Today, someone called me up and asked a shaila about Heter Mechira. So I told him, ask your rabbi. This is a question that if I knew who you were, so I could tell you what I know the halacha says about this. But the halacha also takes into account the individual and the individual circumstances. And even though the dry halacha, if we just open a Shulchan Aruch and the poskim, will come to one conclusion, even that dry halacha takes into account that that's not the halacha for every person in every given situation. Just like ordinarily we'll say, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher. But if a person is in a situation where he's in the middle of a war and there's nothing to eat, then we tell him, eat non-kosher so he won't die. And that's the halacha. We tell them, eat it.
Yeah, he's on a deserted island.
Right? So by the same token...
And the pig only...
Not gold, only the pig. But there's no...
Unfortunately.
By the same token, when a person is evolving and a person is growing and a person is first learning, we can't bombard a person and tell him, everything you did until now, you got to stop. Imagine a person is attending a temple and that's where his parents go. And imagine this guy who came to us straight from his conservative or reformed temple. So if we'd come and tell him, look, orthodoxy says that reform is wrong and conservative is wrong and they have no validity and we don't view the rabbis as rabbis and we don't view the Sefer Torah, the right, as having any holiness, a person can't swallow that. Whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant. We have to deal with the person. So when the question is posed, we have to first recognize that the question cannot be answered empirically in this setting. If we were in a setting where everyone comes from a frum background and the question is just, do I get up and walk out? Do I attend such a seminar? What do I do? That's a different question. But that's what you want to hear. So we'll get to that. But we have to recognize that that isn't the setting we're sitting in. We're sitting in a setting where everyone comes from a different background. And given people's backgrounds, we often say, wait a second, grow slowly. Because if you try to do too much too fast, you won't last. A person can't. We have to let a person grow. And part of growth is doing it slowly. So even though the halacha expects us to keep all 613 mitzvot every day, but the halacha also recognizes that if a person yesterday was eating pork and wasn't keeping Shabbos, and he knew nothing about the laws of family purity, and now he walks in and he says, I want to be from, teach me how to keep Torah the way I should. So we don't tell him, okay, now everything you've done tonight, I got to stop. Freeze. Because it most likely it won't work. The Jewish people, when God reveals himself at Sinai and he does all the miracles, so there God really says, okay, stop, life is over the way you knew it, got to start from scratch. And guess what? Even there, we find 49 days later, what are they doing? Serving the same golden calf they were serving in Egypt. So even there, where God did it, we see that it was difficult and the people didn't live up to it. They should have, but they didn't. So when we speak to a person, we work with a person slowly, teaching a person. Now that doesn't mean we'll tell someone something that's wrong. We won't tell them, yeah, it's okay, don't keep Shabbos. But by the same token, we won't necessarily teach him everything on the first day he walks in. We'll teach him slowly so a person can slowly learn and slowly adapt. Now that being said, when we address this specific question, so I'm going to address it empirically and assume that if there's a person who, for him, the answer is too difficult to swallow where he's holding today, then he shouldn't accept my answer. He should go to someone who knows him, or he should come and talk to me, and we'll figure out what answer is right for him in his situation where he is today. And before we address this, so we need a few introductions again. The Medrash tells us that there were Tanoim and Amoraim who were accosted by Christians. And people came and started making claims to them. And they said, let me pose my arguments to you. Convince me that I'm wrong. And the rabbis of the Mishnah and the Talmud, who mastered Tanakh and the oral law much better than anyone in our day, take the greatest rabbi you could imagine today. Take whoever you want. Multiply him by 1,000, and you get a Rishon. Take him and multiply someone who lived 500 years ago. Then you get maybe a Rambam, a Rashi. Take the Rambam and Rashi and multiply them by 1,000. You get an Amora. Multiply that by 50 or 100, you get a Tana. So we should just get a picture of what great people we're talking about. We're talking about people who were much greater than what we can fathom. People whose hold on Judaism, be it Jewish philosophy, be it the laws of Judaism, far surpassed what our imagination can encounter. We can't imagine what it means, a person who can bring back someone from the dead, like we find Antonina's told Rebbe. Oh, I'm not impressed. You told me this student could bring back someone from the dead. Doesn't mean I trust him. I know even the small ones among you could do that. So that's where they were holding. They were on a level that we don't begin to understand. And they said that when they were accosted by people trying to argue with them, philosophical arguments or arguments from the verses, they, again, take the greatest rabbi today, multiply him by 1,000, you get a rabbi from 600 years ago. Multiply him by 1,000, you get a rabbi from 1,000 years ago. Multiply him by 1,000, you get a rabbi earlier, and then you get a Tana. So imagine, they were so much greater than the greatest rabbi we have today, the greatest rabbi we can think of. And they said that they would run away, and the Gemara records true stories, that when someone would come and try to tell them, try to present them with a philosophy that was foreign to Judaism and try to dissuade them, they wouldn't stand and argue, they'd run away. And one time, one of the rabbis came to Beis Medrash and he was weeping, and they asked him, "What are you weeping about?" He said, "Because as I was running, I heard part of what they said, and I feel it affected me. It affected me." Today, we're weak in our belief, and we're weak in our knowledge of Torah, and out of that weakness, we feel like, "Oh, it won't affect me. So I'll read a little bit of this, I'll read a little bit of that, I'll study this philosophy, that philosophy. It won't affect me." Well, unfortunately, part of the reason that we feel that way is because we're so weak to begin with that we have a hard time sensing how much that can and does weaken us in our faith. They who were so strong, so when you start moving something that's strong, so there you could sense things more. You know, when a princess lies on a bed, so even though she has 17 mattresses, she could feel a pea on the bottom. When we lie on the bed, sometimes we don't feel the crumbs that are on our bed. There's a difference to the sensitivity. But nonetheless, Chazal cautioned us that when the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Dama she'tashiv la'apikores," you should know what to answer if you encounter a person who is an apikores. That's you should know, but don't enter the conversation. You, for yourself, you should know the Jewish philosophical arguments, and at the same time, we are discouraged from entering conversations and arguments when it comes to Jewish philosophies. Even the greatest rabbis who did partake in the arguments were forced to partake. They didn't do it of their own volition. Yeah?
What about Judaism?
That's a separate question. Maybe we'll get that later if you want.
They're the same normal Jews as all Orthodox Jews.
Okay.
Just for Yerushka is the missionarizer.
So that being said, when one is given the scenario where one can hear a lecture, so one doesn't know where it's going to affect him and how it's going to affect him. One is supposed to try to distance oneself from things that are going to be in contradiction with Torah philosophy. It's not that the Torah can't stand up to it. It's that we as individuals are weak, and we're weakened when we hear these things. We can't even tell the nuances of where we're going to be affected. The Torah, even to the smallest nuance, is pure. And the Torah trains our minds and our hearts to be good and pure. And the nuances of the Torah are things that are beyond our perception, and yet they affect us. When one listens to someone speak who is not within the Torah view, and that person is going to speak of things that pertain to the Torah, then that person is inevitably going to suffuse what he says with his mistaken attitudes. I was once sitting at a lecture, and I didn't know this person was getting up to lecture, and at the time, I don't know why I didn't get up and walk out. And the man who walks up to speak was, in my opinion, an apikores. Maybe some will argue with me. And he's a professor on Talmud, and he starts giving a speech. And as he's speaking, I was sitting, I don't know if it was next to my wife, I don't remember who I was sitting next to, and every quote he said, I turned to the person sitting next to me and I said, "He misquoted. He quoted half the quote." He started quoting like he was quoting a Mishnah. I said, "Yeah, he's building a speech because he didn't quote the second half of the Mishnah. He's quoting the Mishnah and he didn't quote the Rif's version in the Mishnah." Line by line, it was like, you know, line item veto. Line by line, the man's speaking and I'm turning to the guy next to him and saying, "That's just wrong. He misquoted. He half quoted." So eventually I was fed up and I started saying it a little louder. Like, so he would hear, "Come on, you're a professor, say it to me. If you're going to give this whole speech," and he was giving a speech about how Judaism views life and death. Now that's a big topic, how we view the holiness of the deceased. Now it was a sensitive arena that it was a ceremony commemorating a relative of mine who was murdered by Arabs. So I wasn't sure if I could get up and walk out, how it would look to the less from people there. But eventually it reached a point where, come on, you're giving a speech on such a topic and you're misrepresenting Judaism. It's nice that you wear a kippah on your head, but you're not representing it fairly. You have no right to speak on the topic if you're going to quote half quotes, misquotes, and you're going to say this is what the Talmud views on the holiness of life and the holiness of the deceased. But at the end of the day, I got nowhere with what I said. I don't think I got anywhere. But it just showed me how a person can stand up there after doing research and writing articles on a topic and be totally warped in everything he's saying. And if you're listening to him, you don't know that. It just so happens to be that a few weeks earlier, I had learned the sugya that he was quoting, so I was familiar with it.
You actually have a responsibility to say things. Not to him directly, but to show your disapproval. So if you were to show your disapproval, you might have been proven.
That's a complicated question. I'm always in doubt when we have to say what, and we always have to be very careful that what we're saying stems from the truth and not from our ego. And that's something which is very difficult. It's very, very difficult. Almost always when we're correcting someone, there's an element of ego.
Isn't it a problem that if you don't say anything, you know that something is being said that's wrong, and as a rabbi, you
Ah, so the question is, am I always in the position of a rabbi?
As a religious Jew, or maybe?
So as a religious Jew, you don't always have to step up. Just like you don't always have to enter the conversation, you could just walk out. But going back to this story, so my recommendation would be, if it's possible, not to be there for it, for the speech. I don't know what the rest of the itinerary is. That's what I would say. I can tell you, I've seen it time and again, and unless you're familiar with what's being discussed, most often you're not going to be able to sense the nuances that are being given over, the nuances that are impure. And impure, I'm using a gentle word. The truth is that it's far worse than that. Chazal tell us that if an apikoros writes a Sefer Torah, there will be times that we burn it and there will be times that we bury it, but we certainly don't treat it with holiness. It depends on what level of apikoros he is. So the fact that the person is standing up there and claims they're quoting Torah, that doesn't make what they're saying holy, and that doesn't make it Torah. Even if they'll open up a Tanakh and read from it, I still would recommend not staying there and listening to it. Correct. A second, David?
So you're saying then, it's not just the whole concept of this thing is to open everybody's eye out. But anyway, there's Reconstructionist, Reform, Conservative, just don't even bother going, you're saying?
I would think so.
Okay.
That's why I'm not going. What's there to argue their own?
Except right, these things, don't forget, this is also relevant when you guys go back home. People look at you and they say, you're in yeshiva, so you know what you're talking about. But let's be honest, we all don't know what we're talking about. No, me included, if someone would come, you know how scared I am every time we have these question and answer sessions? I'm supposed to know the answers. You guys ask the question, I'm sitting up here, I feel like, I'd rather be back there. So far, I've been pretty lucky. On many of them I knew. But I'm always feeling like, I'm going to sit up here and represent the answers. It's not easy, and I don't think I'm fit for it.
But if you say, we've had these discussions before, you've said it plainly, I don't know the answer, we went to the next question.
Right, I will often say I don't know the answer, but sometimes not so comfortable to say I don't know the answer, especially when it's questions about Jewish philosophy. And if you're if you enter these conversations, sometimes when you don't know the answer, so then you could walk away with feelings of doubt about yourself. So, and once you enter the conversation, that's why Chazal always stayed away from it. You don't know how you're going to walk out of the conversation. Theoretically, whenever we enter these conversations, so we have to know that we won't necessarily know the answer today. Eventually, we'll get it. Whenever we have questions in philosophy, part of learning philosophy or emunah, hashkafa, is knowing I can't conquer it in a day. Over time, I'll answer my questions. Sometimes it'll take a year, and sometimes it'll take a decade, and sometimes more. But very often, once a question enters a person's heart, he can't get it out. He'll keep saying, "Yeah, I'll get it, I'll get it." And sometimes a question can change a person's life. It shouldn't be that way, but we don't have control over it. So that's why, bottom line, Chazal instructed us to try and always listen to the words of someone who represents the correct belief. I'm not talking about listening to a lecture in physics. If this woman were lecturing on physics, on atomic energy, it's a different story. But she's not. She's lecturing on Judaism. So if she's lecturing on Judaism, so there, Chazal told us we should try and listen to those that represent our tradition and steer clear of hearing the words of those that do not. And Chazal said it about themselves. So certainly for us, that would be so.
Why can't a female be a rabbi?
That's a separate question. So we'll get to that.